Now it's time for our press review with Antonia Kerrigan. And Antonia, let's start with today's top story, the death of Yahya Sinwar, and there are some triumphant front pages in Israel.
Absolutely. It's fair to say there are some triumphant front pages in Israel, but not just. Let's start with the Jerusalem Post. The front page says, Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar eliminated in Rafah. No hostages hurt. And then Sinwar's dead. Time to stop the axis of evil and free the hostages, quoting Benjamin Netanyahu. A hugely triumphant moment for the IDF. You'll see online they're also sharing, on their website, they're also sharing these videos that we've seen circulating of what's supposed to be the final moments of Sinwar's life. Of course, sharing quotes also from the IDF spokesman saying, praising the determination with which Israeli soldiers acted and saying, we said we would find him and bring him to justice, and we did. Of course, this at a time when the IDF very much needs a win, as its operations in Gaza have been widely viewed as failing to bring home the success expected by the Israeli people. Haaretz, much more nuanced, except for its headline, of course. Yahya Sinwar, the cruel sadist who inflicted disaster on the Palestinians. Extremely condemnatory, of course, of the Hamas leader. However, it says, no doubt he deserved to die, but it's bad news for the hostages. It says that it's got its note of caution, for Israel. It says, throughout history, graveyards are filled with people considered irreplaceable. And it proceeds to list off Hamas, Hezbollah and Palestinian Islamic Jihad leaders who Israeli forces have killed in the past, but whose groups have remained alive, kicking and as zealous as ever. It, of course, talks more about Benjamin Netanyahu. It refers to his lethal hubris, which they say this will only encourage and strengthen. So a note of caution for those in the West, perhaps, expecting this to be the open door to peace. Now, a similar, not exactly the same point of view, but north of the border in Lebanon, the French-speaking L'Orient Le Jour has the headline, Vengeance Never Ending, emphasising that Benjamin Netanyahu has indeed warned that although this is a new step, although this was a victory for Israel, the war is not over. And of course, the Lebanese press extremely negative about that, as they're extremely affected right now.
Now, closer to home, immigration was top of the bill in Brussels yesterday among EU leaders at that summit. Yesterday, we saw Poland get support from EU member states for a plan to curb asylum rights.
Yes, absolutely. This is Poland talking about suspending asylum rights on its soil for people arriving in the country through Belarus or Russia. And the EU yesterday expressed solidarity with Poland and said exceptional situations call for appropriate measures. The Polish press has this article about what Donald Tusk has been saying. Donald Tusk is, of course, now the Polish leader, once the European Council president. He says in this article, immigration law is based on protecting those fleeing dictatorship. He says that now we're facing a new phenomenon, which is an adversary, Russia, weaponizing migrant flows to destabilize European democracies. And on those grounds, the EU27 expressed their support for his plans yesterday. Now, Politico's got this piece, Poland wins after EU backs its proposed asylum ban for Russia and Belarus. It comments on how this marks a bit of a paradigm shift in the immigration rhetoric around the EU. It also points to this conclusion that called for determined action at all levels to speed up returns, that's to say deportations, from the EU. And sources cited within this article say that the talks between EU leaders were, quote, finally more realistic and honest, which suggests a certain lifting of taboos and perhaps also a shift right in terms of immigration rhetoric and immigration policy in Europe.
And on that same subject, we've heard a lot in recent days of Italy's flagship Albania policy, where they are shipping to Albania asylum seekers from countries that they deem to be safe for processing. Ursula von der Leyen is among those endorsing it. A lot of human rights groups are very much opposed to it, but she said that EU countries can learn from it. What has the Italian press to say about how it's going?
Well, let's look at this piece in La Repubblica, which is more about the operational execution of this policy. The headline says, the Albanian centre risks emptying. First verdicts expect today. Now, of course, the first 16 migrants were taken to one of these centres this week, and they'll have their hearings today by video link after being appointed lawyers remotely yesterday. This journalist thinks the centre could be empty again by tonight. The reasons are twofold, not just an ECJ ruling on the 4th of October that said that this policy was unlawful. That's not a legally binding ruling. But what could have a real impact is a recent wave of decisions in Italian courts based on this idea that there is a strict dichotomy of safe and unsafe countries. The courts have recently refused to rubber stamp a number of detentions from people from countries on the so-called safe list, because in fact there's a little bit more to it than that. For instance, someone from Peru, they refused to rubber stamp his detention due to narco-guerrilla warfare in the country, which is still a phenomenon that exists and which particularly affects vulnerable groups. Tunisia, also on the safe list, but not deemed a safe country, for instance, for the gay community. Nigeria, deemed safe, except for members of vulnerable communities like journalists, the disabled, the LGBT community, among others, also with groups like Boko Haram active in the country. So if this journalist is right, this is going to have been potentially a very expensive migratory policy in which judges are going to conclude that detention is unlawful and these people will have to be brought back to Italy. It's not clear what happens then, but certainly this idea of offshoring detention of migrants is catching on. Of course, we've got a lot of publicity around the UK's Rwanda scheme, which eventually and very expensively ran aground. But just this week, very quickly, the Info Migrants has this piece on the Netherlands considering sending failed asylum seekers to Uganda. So it's fair to say around Europe, they're watching Albania and Italy very closely as the idea has once again become much less taboo.
And finally, you've been reading into the rivalry between vampire bats and penguins, not something that always makes the headlines, but according to National Geographic, it's been getting ugly.
Absolutely. So this is in Peru, where you have a population of Humboldt penguins and vampire bats. Vampire bats generally, exclusively feed off animal blood. Generally in that area, they go for sea lions. However, easier prey is the blood of penguin chicks. So this is not great for the Humboldt penguins. Having vampire bats feeding off their blood can cause excessive bleeding, which is dangerous for the lives of the individuals, and of course can lead to the spread of diseases like rabies in the population. This is not great as well for a species classed vulnerable to extinction. But fear not, the parent penguins are having absolutely none of it and they're ready to fight back. There are two main ways they do. So one is vocalising their displeasure in their penguin way, and the other is by projectile defecating on or at the predator. So it doesn't have a 100% success rate, but certainly it's fair to say the penguins are fighting back.
And very creatively, by the looks of it as well. That's all we have time for now, but do stay tuned for more news coming up on France 24.